From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel will return very soon.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control, Deck, and most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Matt, this is a two-parter for us. It's one that you and I are very excited about, and I have to tell you, I'm surprised, man, that we did not talk about this in part one. Do you remember those spy craft or spy tech toys? Did you ever mess with those?
Oh, yeah. Spycraft toys were the stuff. I remember the magnifying glasses, the mirrors that I could look around a corner with. Trying to think of other... an early walkie-talkie. I remember having a version of that.
Yeah, there used to be this red laser toy that was like it was supposed to be a trap. But it was really just, you know, you would walk past a laser and it would in that case ping up. But yeah, so we know that spying in society has been glamorized, right? And we know that unlike some other things that have been glamorized, say dragons, spying is real. Spying is dangerous, sometimes as dangerous in the long-term effects as fictional dragons. With our previous episode, folks, which we do hope you enjoyed, we looked into the past of tradecraft. That's the classy name for spycraft. And then we looked a little bit into the present problems, the trends, and the conspiracies afoot. Today, Matt, you and I and our fellow conspiracy realists, along, of course, with Paul Mission Control Deccant, are exploring the present in a little more detail. And toward the end, we're going to look into what I think is the scary part, the future of spying.
Oh, yes. But right now we're going to stick in more of the present. Just we're going to talk modern spycraft. What is happening right now? Because it is happening right now, we assure you. Not to you.
Well,
probably.
Maybe. Here are the facts. Yeah, it's changed. Modern spycraft is around, but it's changed in step with technology. And if you look at the history of human civilization, one unfortunate truth you'll always find is that war is responsible for a lot of innovations. Like bad things happening to people on a very large scale often produces some of the most innovative periods in human history, which stinks because there are billions of people who died as a result of this. And would you want to go to them and say, well, hey, you know, overall, nowadays, we think it was kind of worth it?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, when it comes to spying, I don't know if I would characterize it in the same way, Ben, exactly just with the messed up nature of it with spying. Because for me, I do see kind of beauty here where you're marrying scientific innovation with pure, I think, human creativity in a lot of ways with some of the tech that is developed in over the course of the years and is being used right now.
Yeah. Well said, Matt. And we talked a little bit at the end of our first episode about how the fictional world of spying doesn't always match what people are actually doing and how technology might seem like it would mean the old days of tradecraft are gone, but that's kind of misleading because the truth is, yes, there are, when you talk about SIGINT and HUMINT, yes, there are quote unquote spies who kind of operate purely in the digital realm, but the truth is that for most folks, if you thought of them as like a field agent or a field asset, they're taking a hybrid approach. They operate clandestinely, leveraging digital tradecraft. There was one example we found. It's pretty interesting. In 2010, the FBI announced it had taken out this Russian spy ring that was engaging in what they called long-term deep undercover activity. This is like when you hear those terms, this gets kind of close to that show, The Americans. You remember The Americans? Did you watch it?
Yeah, it's very close to that. Perhaps exactly that. Maybe it was based on that. No, I'm just joking. It wasn't. But yeah, this is very real. Somebody who has been around for a decade or more, who has just been keeping tabs on someone or some entity or multiple, right? In this case, it was 10 people who were doing this, the ones that were caught up when the FBI made that announcement. It's incredible. According to what we found here, they would exchange information over free wireless at their local Starbucks, which was in Times Square.
Yeah. And again, they got away with this for a long, long time, right? They were successful. It's interesting to me for us to take a moment and think about that. We had talked in the past about how governments, when controlling information, whether they were keeping secrets or whether they were learning secrets, they were taking an approach where you could just shut down the avenues toward that information, right? Like you can write a couple of letters to the newspapers of note and they won't report on something. You can suppress other stories, et cetera. But now with the deluge of information in which we exist, it is a valid strategy to just sort of like blend in with the crowd of endless bytes and bits. And that's what they were doing, right? They're not some exception to some ironclad rule. Physical tradecraft has embraced, I don't like this term, but it has embraced cyber operations. Mm-hmm. And they move in tandem this day. I don't know. How do you feel about that term? When you hear some like high level government so-and-so saying, well, we gotta concentrate on the cyber.
Yeah, I just imagine them in their computer room, which they have. Every congressperson has a computer room in their house, and they're doing naughty things on a chat room. That's all I imagine. And I don't like imagining it, and I don't appreciate it. Well, at least, yeah, the middle school version of me.
So they click on like find local singles in your area and they get some ransomware or something. And then they all of a sudden being worried about cyber is a huge part of their platform. I can see
Oh, no,
it.
Dude, they're not even going that far. They're just on an AOL chat room.
Oh, okay. They're not to the land of pop-up ads yet.
No.
Okay. Well, I wish them luck in their war against cyber. Also, the aims of spying, the aims of tradecraft have increased. Industrial espionage is a huge, huge industry. There's a lot of money in it. Agents or assets can also focus on monitoring and disrupting terrorist activities. Of course, as you know, If you were alive during 2001 and the aftermath, you've seen the global community, especially in the West, increasingly focus on what are called terrorist activities. And sometimes, well, unfortunately, it's not uncommon for not just the U.S. but other countries to kind of over time expand the definition of what qualifies as terrorism. And also, you know, they're after drug smugglers and cartels.
Always after those guys, and they have been forever. Always. While they sell the drugs on the side. Shh. yeah. And Ben, just before we continue here, I want to reiterate the importance of having a mini cassette tape recorder, a physical one that's not connected digitally to anything else. Everybody should have one of those, just in case. You should go out and get one because you can't detect it on a network, which is the best. Well, good. There you go.
You have one, but I thought it's for your music.
Oh, no. No. It's for the craft.
All right. Okay. I respect it. I respect the craft. So you should. Yeah, it is good, by the way, to not normalize everything being connected online or everything being connected on a cloud. I think Matt and I are just putting that out there, just something to think about. But whether we're talking terrorism, industrial espionage, drugs and firearm smuggling or whatever, the motivations remain the same. A typical non-employee spy or, excuse us, asset will be motivated by one of three things. And when we say non-employee, what we mean is someone who wasn't specifically hired and trained to engage in tradecraft, which could mean either being a spy or stopping a spy. So let's maybe talk a little bit about what gets people in the game. You have to be listen to this these parts closely. There are about three rough categories, and they are not created equally.
Yeah, the first it would be if you are seeking some kind of gain, whether financial, social gain. Let's say an employee with top secret clearance at a nuclear facility. And this person has run into, you know, an issue. They can't quite make their mortgage the way they used to be able to because of whatever situation. And maybe there's also a gambling problem going on.
They got held up by the one-armed bandit, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that could be a real issue. Now they need to find a way to make some more money on the side. They decide to get that money by selling secrets, which is, you know, a real currency.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, exactly. Or they could even just be not just the idea of financial gain. It could be some kind of social gain. They could be bored with life, right? They could be tired of the 2.5 kids, the ranch level home, the breakfast and the dinner at the same time, and some endless march toward death. Ennui is real.
You're just describing my life, man. I appreciate
I am
it.
Not. You don't have 2.5 kids. I bring that statistic up because I love it. It's where is that 0.5 kid? You know, for a while, that was a national average that was oft quoted. And I wonder who had 0.5 kid. Anyhow, let's say you are someone, general you, is someone who's kind of bored with life and they're suffering from the nihilism and the gray days, but they love spy films, they love Bond films. They want to shake things up. They want to be the kind of person movies taught them would be cool, you know? This last idea, by the way, it happens, but it's incredibly dangerous. And a lot of folks are not going to get the results they want on either side of that relationship. Because what will people do if they crave social approval? They will end up giving themselves away because social approval inherently depends on other people knowing what you're doing, which is kind of antithetical to spy work. Any case, if we're talking like financial problems, we're talking social desires, the ideology may not really matter here. And a relatively small sum of cash can prime a pump, and that leads to a deeper, increasingly dangerous revelation as they exchange more and more info for more and more money, like the thing we talked about recently in Strange News, where that nuclear engineer and his spouse ended up, for relatively small sum, like $100,000 in cryptocurrency, they ended up thinking they were giving away quite a bit. But of course, spoiler, that was not a foreign government they were talking to. That was the FBI playing alphabet in disguise, I guess.
Yeah, just switching the letters around. F, K, B, G,
fib.
I.
They were doing a fib, literally, huh? But okay, in this situation, I think it's important, Matt, for us to talk about why most of those would-be spies who are motivated that way are doomed from the jump. First, they make a really, really, really big mistake. It's an easy mistake to make. They make a very egregious mistake, which is assuming that their access to knowledge is powerful leverage. It is a little bit of leverage, right? But that leverage is dwarfed by the leverage actual intelligence agencies will have over them the moment they come forward.
Yeah, I guess so, because, well, if they're on a list already, they're being monitored already, right? I mean, I know there's active monitoring happening through SolarWind and some of these other programs at all times on anyone within the United States. But I wonder, I wonder how deep that goes for an individual. I don't mean to disagree with you, Ben. I just mean, I think it, yeah, I guess it just, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying. Like, not everybody is a high-value target for spying.
Yeah,
right?
They'd have to ping the radar one time, right? That first time, I think I agree with you. The moment they come forward, that's when, oh, collection is occurring now.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You're,
oh, okay.
So what I mean when I say like you're doomed from the start is think of it this way. Let's say, who are you going to pick on? Let's pick on Paul. So let's say Paul, in addition to being one of the best super producers, if not the best in the world, is also somehow working at an embassy in a foreign country, and a foreign national approaches him and says, hey, look, I will make a deal with you if you give me, you know, X amount of cash. Paul doesn't have to give him that money. He can pay him less and he can say, hey, take the deal or I'll go tell the government of this country that you were trying to be a spy. Is that what you want to do?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Like I have a crumpled 20. I know it's not $10,000, but it's also not torture and death. So why don't you tell me what's on your mind, bro? Like that can happen because you sacrifice that leverage. And if you're the intelligence operator or your potential case agent, then you dictate the rules of the game going forward. So there could be, you know, and it's happened before. The would-be James Bond walks into a conversation thinking they're going to walk out a millionaire, and then they walk away realizing that their life and maybe the life of their loved ones is now in Paul Deccan's hands.
Wow. I think in that scenario that you've just described, Ben, the only thing you can do is throw your hands up in the air like this and start yelling about the widow's son. Like that's all you could do. And say, this man is accusing me of spycraft really loudly.
I think it depends on what country you're in.
It's true.
Because that's going to whoosh for some people. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. Well, this is all just the first category. So what about this? Let's pause. We've got some redactions to do. We'll come back and we'll tell you about the second categories that most non-professional spies fall into.
And we are back. Let us jump into the next version of a would-be spy, someone motivated by their own ideology or the ideology that has been given to them that they've adopted. Let's say someone living within the United States says, you know, I don't like what capitalism is doing over here. I think I can see myself supporting the communist platform. Well, I am a spy already. I mean, an asset for the NSA. You know what? I'm going to do whatever I can to help out the movement.
Yeah, I agree with the communist platform, says our would-be spy, and I am a high-level NSA employee. I'm here to assist you any way I can.
That's just an email, by the way, to KGB.gov.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, KGB.gov or post it on Twitter.
Yes.
Tagging at KGB. So this is less likely. I mean, we're joking a little, but this is less likely to happen today because these types of employees are likely to be monitored by their own governments. It just makes sense. And then this weird shadow game unfolds. It's tougher, actually, for the would-be spy master here, because the employee who's trying to turn for ideology has to figure out whether they're talking with an actual operative or one of the alphabet boys spinning out a trap. And then on the flip side, the foreign intelligence crew has to figure out whether this source is credible, trustworthy, or at the very least easy to control, and actually who they say they are, instead of a double agent. And this is like, this becomes this weird cat and mouse game, and it gets really, really confusing. And that's not even adding to the fact that sometimes intelligence agencies or operations have kind of scored an own goal or shot themselves in the foot, like that guy who got reported for attempting to radicalize members of a mosque here in the U.S. Yep. And then it turned out like he was supposed to be finding terrorists, but he was trying to invent them. And then he got reported as a freaking terrorist. It's tough. But that's still like, I would rank that the ideological aspect. If you can get past the burden of figuring out who people are, I would rank that as a little bit better than financial control. But both of those pale in comparison to the old tried and true best way to turn someone reliably for a long time. And that is, beat me here, Paul, that is to blackmail the shit out of them.
That's right. That's right. Compromat. That's the best thing you can do if you want to make a spy someone to work for you. So... Yeah, I mean, you really just you pick a target, somebody who seems vulnerable, somebody who has some problems maybe in their life, and then monitor them for a little while, and then you've got your own little monitor that you create. It's kind of messed up. It's really messed up.
This is the direct route to non-consensual spying. This is what we're talking about when we talk about turning someone. For instance, this is unfortunately common. Back in the days when homosexuality was largely considered a crime in different parts of the world, and still is considered a crime in different parts of the world, intelligence agencies loved being able to hang exposure over the head of a potential asset. Do what we say, and when we say it, they would argue, or we'll release these pictures, or we'll release this evidence, and you will be outed. This would absolutely ruin someone's personal and professional life, could lead to suicide, could lead to homicide, very ugly things. Or, for example, let's say you're apprehending someone for a crime. You see this in cop shows all the time, and this really happens. Say you've caught someone who's like the little male angler fish that's attached, fused to the big female angler fish. That's how they reproduce. The sea is a weird place. You caught a smuggler who's one of those little angler fish, and you know that they've got cartel ties that attach them to the big fish you're after. You know you can use this little fish to travel up the chain of command all the way to the boss. And so you can make a deal with them, and you can say, hey, we'll go lenient. You know, depending on how you perform, you might even get immunity, right?
Maybe
that's a big maybe. That's why
I'll
it's
have
always
to talk to my superiors. Mm-hmm.
That's why it's always phrased with, you know, I can put in a good word for you. Which, if you are listening and this conversation is relevant to your life, putting in a good word for you, quote unquote, is not the same thing as what it is implied to be. And you need a lawyer. I don't know how you're listening to a podcast if you're in this situation right now, but get a lawyer.
Maybe you're the lawyer and you need to reach out to some new clients who are in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spread the good word, I guess. Da-da-da-da. But this is like, this is where you get to the situations like dangling the carrot of safety and WITSEC, a witness protection program. And I always love, you know, I think you and I have talked about this off air, but knowing how cash strapped so many places are, so many law enforcement places, I always, in my head, I know this isn't true, but I always love to picture witness protection as being like so cash strapped that they can only produce, you know, like, let's say 10 fake identities a year, and then you have to audition for them. You know, like you, like when they say they'll get you in a talk with WITSEC, it's really your chance to audition. to try to be these people.
Anyway. That's pretty great. Somebody has to audition to become Claire Downing, who's just a person out in Montana somewhere.
Yes, out in Big Sky Country. And so they have to nail the accent. And they're like, you know, thank you for your time coming in. We're going to go with someone else. but
that's messed up.
But if you could survive... if you survive the cartel, then in 2022, we think we have some more opportunities.
Oh, wow, dude.
Maybe. All right. Anyway, probably doesn't happen. But here's the thing. The other thing, if you want to turn this coercion up to 11. If somebody, let's say somebody's clean, they don't have any skeletons in their personal closet, they haven't committed a crime, they are okay with any part of their personal life being exposed, then you would be out of luck, right? Not so. Why not just create a scandal or a crime and hook them that way? This is where the real objectively kick-ass compromat comes in. That's where you put in those honey traps, right? That's where you do the 2-to-10 rule. These things don't always work.
What's that?
The 2-to-10 rule? Yes. I'm so glad you asked. Okay. Have you ever heard of this before? Okay. So this happens with government folks and with like high level business types. You're familiar with the idea of people rating attractiveness on 1 to 10, 10 being best, 1 being the worst, right?
Okay.
All right. So the 2-to-10 rule is this informal thing where people will say, okay, buddy, I know you think you're cool. I know you think you're attractive. No matter how cool or attractive you are, when you're traveling out in this situation, you need to think of yourself as a 2 on a 1-to-10 level of attractiveness. And if some stranger comes up to you at a party, at a conference, at a hotel bar, and they look anywhere near a 10, you need to assume they're after something and you need to remove yourself from the situation. So it's a way for people to like manage egos and their love of attention. The 2-10 rule, it's called.
All right. There you go. Well, I think I would fail at that.
You think you would fail at that?
Yeah.
I'm glad you're...
I need too much attention.
It's not saying think of yourself as... It's not saying call yourself a 2. It's just assume that for the purpose.
No, that's really smart. Smart.
So let's say you become a spy in the modern day, and you don't want to be some overzealous ideologue, and it's not, to quote the Joker, about the money, and you're not trying to save your own skin. Let's say you've grown up in the U.S., and you want to be a professional, full-time employee working for your government. If you want to work as a spy or spy catcher in the FBI, you're looking at something called a special agent. And like all intelligence agencies, or like all intelligence agencies operating at this level, it's kind of tough to get in. You know what I mean? You can't just shoot them a text.
No. I had a friend one time that was, let's say, auditioning to become a Secret Service member, and just learning about how rigorous some of that was. And it all had to do with your background, with what you've done in your life, and then sufficiently being able to pass a polygraph test attesting to those facts that you have never done a certain psychedelic or you've never tried marijuana before. Like, whoa. And then I'm trying to imagine how you actually apply that in the trade for somebody who is going to need to have some of that in their background. I think you're going to want to be able to have some of that, just for some of the situations a person might have to be in when they're applying that craft. Anyway, so it's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are, you have to balance the likelihood of blowing your cover versus your own personal ethical boundaries, you know. But if you want to work as this kind of special agent for the FBI, you need to be between 23 and 37 years old. If you are a veteran and you meet a couple different criteria, you can get a waiver that will allow a little more latitude on that. You have to be a citizen of the U.S., no convictions for felonies, sex crimes, domestic violence. In practice, often, if you're coming in green, then any criminal record is a big no-no, even stamp fraud, which is still, what a hilarious crime. You have to pass a drug test. You got to be in at least good standing with your student loans. You don't have to have them paid off, but you can't be, you know, super delinquent. You can never have had any kind of security clearance revoked in the past. You can never have worked toward the overthrow of the U.S. government. That's a quote.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Hey, I was a supervillain. I changed my mind. You guys are pretty cool. No, it's
low-key action.
That's the thing, though. In practice, this means membership in anything, however passing or transient your membership could be, anything that would be deemed a terrorist group. And Uncle Sam is very, very loose in their determination of what qualifies as something working to overthrow the U.S. government.
I'm looking at you, vegans. Sorry.
Looking at you, vegans. Yeah.
It's true.
It is true. COINTELTRO.
All right. Yes,
it is. Matt is not joking, folks. You also have to go to college, have some kind of bachelor's degree. It'd be great to have some sort of work experience, driver's license, all this, except for that weird overthrow of the U.S. government thing, sounds pretty normal. Also, the application process is pretty intense. You start with an online application. Then you got some written tests. You got tests focused on your set, your Liam Neeson-esque set of skills. If you pass these tests, you're still not done, of course. You get an in-person interview, a writing test. And if you pass this, you can still fail the process because it's not enough to pass. You have to be one of the best of the people who did pass. A minus is not good enough. It's still not over. You get what's called a conditional letter of appointment. Don't be fooled because the conditions you have to meet are tough. Physical fitness, how many push-ups can you do in a minute? How fast can you run a mile and a half, etc.? After you passed all this, now it's time for the medical exam and, like you said, Matt, the background check. The background check sinks a lot of people. I wanted to ask, when your friend was applying to the Secret Service, did you get a call?
I did not. Maybe I'm mischaracterizing. He's more of an acquaintance, a friend of a good friend. So I did not get hit through that series of rays that went out. But no, thankfully, I don't think I've ever been asked to, you know, say anything about one of my acquaintances to get them a job as a spy yet.
Yeah, or maybe didn't know.
Okay.
Maybe you didn't know. But after all that stuff, if you're one of the few people who make it past that process, you're not done. You need new agent training. That's 20 weeks, 850-hour classes on stuff like firearms, cases, operational skills, an even tougher physical exam. And then when you graduate from new agent training, you officially become a special agent for the FBI. I think in general, it's more fair to describe these professionals as maybe spy catchers when it comes up. And, you know, a spy, a CIA spy or CIA case agent is a different ball of wax. Still, a lot of the same tests apply. In addition, we should mention that because of what we just described about how people can get turned, addiction issues, gambling problems, anything that could be used against you by adversaries in the field is also something they try to detect. I had I'll call them an acquaintance as well, who found themselves, they had security clearance and they were active in counterintelligence, and they found themselves being targeted by a foreign power in what seemed like an alarmingly casual way. Someone originally would call these places, whose numbers are not published, of course, and they started off pretty low level, like clearly discernible accent, claiming there's a wrong number and saying they're trying to reach another specific person, which is a little bit of social engineering, right? To try to get, hey, can you just get me the right extension? So they shut that stuff down quick, and then they kept getting more requests for these people, and it was always a different person, you know, which means it's a little bit of a fishing expedition probably on their part. And eventually, someone with no discernible accent calls on the phone, and they call for this person, this acquaintance, and they say, look, I think some of our friends have been calling a lot. So I figured it'd be best if you and I just talk directly. And I'm not going to tell you.
And it was Lyndon B. Johnson.
It was Lyndon B. Johnson. It was old Jumbo himself. But that kind of stuff happens, like these slow escalations. And this person who called knew some things about this acquaintance's past. So it was kind of like that scene where the men in black show up and know everything about your UFO sighting. Anyway, it's a real thing. This is just a brief look at how people can end up becoming spies, sometimes against their will. But for most folks, including the world's intelligence communities, the biggest concern about the world of tradecraft today is how we predict the future of espionage. So it's time for us to redact just a little more. I am getting some phone calls from an unlisted number. So I think, Matt, we should pause.
Oh, sorry, that was me.
Oh, that was you? That was you. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So pause for a word from our sponsors and we'll return. Here's where it gets crazy.
Yes, we are now in the future. Don't be fooled. Time is not passing as it once was. Now we are here, in the future. Oh, wait, no, it's there. And that future is, oh man, it's weird when it comes to how you and me and Ben and Paul and everyone else will be surveilled. Just because we already are. We know this. We talked about this. Look at all the other episodes in this feed. We are being surveilled, all of us, but when there is targeted surveillance on an individual, my goodness, there is so much to unfold before us.
Yes. The world will still need human operatives. You'll still need analysts. You'll still need computer scientists. And yeah, you'll still need field agents. I mean, shout out to Stuxnet. It needed
great job, guys.
Yeah, it needed a human to get in there.
God.
But there's a bad side to this, too. I mean, political volatility is spiking. Things are becoming inherently less predictable. And everybody kind of wants predictability, at least for their perspective. They want predictability that is unpredictable to other people. It's a whole thing. But there are serious fears that when it comes to the espionage game, especially the new DLC, the digital version, the U.S. is falling far behind. Just earlier this year, and this is a report, Matt, you and I both read, the intelligence community issued a survey of where the world might be in 2040. It does not look good. Just a slight spoiler here. The title of that report is A More Contested World, which is really really strange prose for a government report.
Yeah. Yeah, rather than unifying humanhood.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's really it's messed up. I got lost in one of the sections around page 68, if you're looking at the PDF, because you can find it. For a layperson just interested in it, it makes you feel uncomfortable. For someone who is in charge, maybe a diplomat, political leader, someone who is reading these predictions, these forecasts, you can just see where conflict on a state level of, you know, between states and within states, it seems to be all of it coming to a head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because a lot of powerful forces now are not old school military. It's not old school statecraft. You know, we're talking separatist forces, secessionist forces, people who got together and said, let's make our own militia. You know what I mean? Right. You guys want to do that? Let's make our own militia. Or,
well, I may be falsely thinking about this, Ben, but I imagine the old guard that you're describing there before some of the militias and more militant groups, I'm imagining them, the heads of those groups, being able to hang out and share a brandy together, you know, or like in a study and joke a bit about the games that are being played and like have this back and forth kind of relationship, even though they are both aware that there are armies that they control spying on the other one. I feel like it's, maybe I'm equating it too much with like the rules of engagement in war back during maybe the U.S. Civil War or even World War One, where there's so many norms that are just followed by everyone engaging in combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, I don't think you're far off. You know, we also see this kind of paramilitary force of hackers who have plausible the governments who are running them have plausible deniability in a lot of cases and can say, hey, these are just private citizens, patriots acting on their own, you know. What can you do? That's like that. There is a power to that. And it's also it's something that you can see in the wind already. Earlier this month, one of the senior, there's that word again, cybersecurity officials at the Pentagon came forward and explained why he quit. He quit the gig abruptly in September of this year. And just recently, he said that he thought it was going to be impossible for the U.S. specifically to compete with China in the realm of cybersecurity, especially given the development of machine consciousness or AI, artificial intelligence. His name, Nicholas Chalian. He joined the USAF, the Air Force, as its first software officer, chief software officer, in August 2018. And his job was to equip the Air Force and the Pentagon with the most secure advanced software available. So just
and he was like, nope, yeah. This isn't going to work.
He tried for a few years, and then he said the Pentagon doesn't get it. This is like dangerously behind. We have specific quotes from him that give you a sense of how deep he thinks the problem goes.
He says, we have no competing fighting chance against China in 15 to 20 years. Right now, it's already a done deal. It is already over, in my opinion. And then he went on to describe the level at which the U.S. is playing cyber as a kindergarten level.
Mm-hmm. No, some not everybody makes it past kindergarten on the first try, so it can be a little tough, but it's clear what he's saying there. He's not coming to these conclusions based on nothing. He is very well aware that in April of last year, like you said earlier, Matt, multiple U.S. departments were hit with something called SolarWinds. Hackers were able to spy on digital activities of staff and access some of their emails, including probably folks related to intelligence operations abroad. Google stopped working with the Pentagon in 2018 because 12 employees quit over a project that we talked about where Google helped the Pentagon make software that could improve the accuracy of drone strikes. And drones already play a huge part in spying. For those who agree with this guy who resigned, the future of U.S. espionage is looking pretty ugly. It may by necessity move from an offensive or proactive stance to a defensive or reactionary position, putting it on its back foot. This is never, by the way, where you want to be.
Nope. And you can read a lot about this larger situation, especially if you head over to Foreign Policy, which is one of our favorite places to read about any of this kind of stuff. Well, it's mine, Ben. I don't speak for you, but FP kind of rocks. There's a writer there, Edward Lucas, who says closed societies, because there is a trend that we're heading towards having more closed nations, as we saw with Brexit, with you know the actions of the U.S. over the course of the past 5-6 years. These closed societies will increasingly have advantages over open societies. And Edward is saying that technology is going to become more, it's just a very disruptive, powerful force, an asymmetrical force that can come from anywhere.
Yeah, and think about it this way. His article, I highly recommend reading, but he notes that if you were just a few years back, if you were maybe a Canadian asset and you were in Moscow and you said you were a graduate student in architecture, that's the example he uses, then it could be difficult for Russian intelligence to figure out the true story. You could ask this person about their background. You could search their belongings. You could have them physically tailed. You could check out their paperwork. And if you didn't come up with anything from there, then all you would be able to do if you thought this was an operative is to sit around and carefully watch them, continue to monitor them and hope that at some point they made a mistake. But now, a cover that could have been foolproof as recently as 2 decades ago can be burned to the ground in a couple of minutes. Facial recognition and big data are the main reason. They're the main matches leading to this arson. Let's see. let's say I'm a spy and Matt is a counterintelligence agent. Matt, the first place you're going to check to see what's going on with my cover story is the internet. Am I in a photo anywhere as the real me? Well, here come the handcuffs. What about closed circuit television? Especially in countries where that can be easily pulled without needing a warrant. What about social media? What about any phone I've touched, you know?
Dude, just jump on Instagram, grab some of those photos, and then use recognition on a handful of them. And if anything exists, you could find it.
And does any part of this digital web, this digital fingerprint, even like maybe just a long, long neglected LinkedIn page or an old fossilized MySpace page, do they touch any former or current U.S. government official? Tut, tut, tut. Day one stuff. Let's go back to facial recognition. I mean, this can be automated. You can mobilize it on a traveling drone. That means passing a single check at customs is not enough anymore. You gotta be buttoned up every single day afterwards. And if you're an asset in an unfriendly country, this is a tall milkshake for anyone, even the best. At this point, you would have to seriously consider things like the possibility of plastic surgery. And there's no way to return to one's original appearance after that with how technology is today. So, okay, what's the solution, Matt? What's the solution here? If like, hey, let's say you catch me, and you say, you know, excellent work, agent, and they say, but it's a lucky day for you, I am double agent. I have the advice.
Wow, yeah, advice is don't do anything on the internet. Become a ghost. Don't do anything. Operating cash. No, I'm just joking. Is that where we're going?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm imagining that's one of the only things you could really do. Because any kind of digital fingerprint, any social media, anything where someone is taking pictures of you, right? It doesn't even have to be you taking pictures of you. You just have to watch where you are at all times. Oh my God. But here's the problem. If you are really good at this and you kind of just don't exist, that could be even worse for you when it comes to someone trying to discover you as a spy. Because how suspicious is that right now in 2021 or 2034, whenever you're hearing this? If there's no digital fingerprint on you, you are the most likely suspect.
Right. It's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Agencies still always know all the old school tricks. So even if you're trying to protect yourself by not having a GPS surveillance device like a smartphone on you, somebody can just shadow you. And you probably won't notice them unless you're also pretty aware of your surroundings in a way that sadly a lot of people are not. Intelligence agencies try to address some of these tech problems. One way they do it is just throw a ton of money at it, making these cover identities, which are sometimes called legends. These covers for their officers starting from scratch, false names, documents, addresses, but with a digital twist, putting up a old fake Facebook account. Someone just started Facebook. It didn't manipulate their psychology the way Mark hoped it would, so they stopped going on Facebook. And yes, you can find Janine Jansen, but she has not logged in since 2007, something like that. So it looks real, and it looks like she just lost interest. Make a credit rating that is somewhere around the national average, maybe a little lower, just to be like realistic. And then you can use the other strategy is to just not use agents as often. Get people who are kind of clean skinned, it's called. Freshly recruited intelligence officers.
Recently showered.
The smell of lavender and zest. And the only thing you see in their online history or whatever is their previous civilian lives. And since they've already never had a criminal record, nor a serious offense, nor serious family problems, et cetera, then they just look kind of vanilla. They look like boring people, which is what you want. And then the third is to just send any intelligence officer on a one-off mission. Just say, look, you got one shot. Make it count. You are going to be on a desk for the rest of your career after this because we can't play around with it. And the fourth, of course, is to play on the shallow end of the pool, which is we're only doing this kind of espionage in neutral or friendly countries. So that means like, okay, for instance, that means, and this is just an example, hypothetical, folks, that means we want someone to learn more about what insert operation here that the Chinese government is running, but we're not going to go to China to do it. Instead, we're going to go to Paris, where they have an embassy, or, you know, London or wherever. And so the backdrop of our spying operation becomes much less antagonistic, right? Because these are, at least ostensibly, friendly countries. And now we have to ask how long will human intelligence remain relevant in an online world? How long is it, for example, before not rocking a neural implant becomes suspicious? How long before like not having something plugged into your brain becomes as weird as not having any online presence?
Mm.
I don't know. And if everybody has it, like the old, right now, the way to get away with a good dead drop is just obviously don't take a cell phone with you. But now not carrying a cell phone makes some people suspicious.
So, and if you get into a car accident or emergency situation, you don't have a cell phone.
Right, right. And also, mobile networks are all extremely vulnerable. If someone with state level resources is after you, so it's much harder to dodge a tail, to change your patterns. And now the new algorithmic analysts can catch things human counterintelligence will miss. They can also exercise some pretty spooky powers of prediction. So this leads some longtime veterans of the great game to say the West needs to change the rules. It says the West is unduly constrained by laws that don't apply to their counterparts, to their people on the other side of the chessboard. Like, you don't need a warrant to pull somebody's personal cards in China. You just need to run them through the system. Like, the power just has to be on for that machine. And spies today increasingly have to work with lawyers to test the legality of their own operations. The idea is, even if they know they've got someone dead to rights, they still have to get a warrant. They still have to justify 1,000 things that from their perspective, the bad guys simply don't have to do. That is an argument not everybody agrees with. Like, it's pretty obvious that the FISA courts themselves are a rubber stamp. They don't turn down a lot of warrant requests. But that's where we are. That's the future of spying. It is evolving at a pace unparalleled since the rise of mass media. And in a very, very short amount of time, the U.S. may no longer be in the lead. It may not be in the lead now, to be honest with you.
It seems like it might not be, but maybe they're just so good at what they do that nobody even knows how good they are. They don't need any of that societal recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's up. I hope. Maybe not. Maybe I do hope. I don't know. I don't know.
The alternative is scary, but that's so yeah. It goes deeper than the spy tech toys, which, by the way, I think you can still buy online, Matt.
Oh, snap.
On the off chance you're interested. I don't know what kids play with these days.
Oh, I'm totally interested. My son would love something like that. I actually got him a couple of things like that already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But anyway, because like father, like son. We didn't even talk about this thing that I wanted to bring up, Ben, that I think we can save for an entire episode on its own. Honestly, I think so. Centra Technology Incorporated.
Yes. We briefly interacted about this off air, didn't we?
Yeah, this is this is right up my alley as far as just my interests. So I'm thinking that it might be the same for others out there. No promises, but look up Centra Technology Incorporated if you're just hanging out right now, and be careful. Maybe do it with a Tor browser.
Well, then also maybe continue looking into the private sector of intelligence, which is its own field. And to what degree do consulting groups, or those that call themselves consulting groups, qualify as spying, espionage adjacent? Shout out Mackenzie, right? And let us know what your take is. Let us know if you believe that humans will still participate in the future of spying. We'd love to hear from you. We hope you enjoyed this. You can contact us directly. So many ways. We try to be easy to find online.
Yes. So take that giant digital footprint that you've already got and aim it towards conspiracy stuff on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube. And if you don't like those, we're also on Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show. If you would like to reach out to us and tell us your story with your mouth, you can do that. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK.
You'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes belong to you. Do with them what you will. Only ask the following. Please give yourself a cool nickname. That kind of stuff always makes our day. Tell us what's on your mind. Second most important thing, let us know if we can use your voice and or your message on the air. Again, there's one more important thing. It's the most important thing. Don't feel like you have to censor yourself. If you call 1-833-STDWYTK and you realize that 3 minutes isn't enough to cover your story, then send us a good old-fashioned email. You can shoot us a line any time of day, any time of night, anywhere in this world or off of it. We are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.